Hi, this is Bob Familiar. Recently, I had the chance to speak with Eric Newcomer, Chief Technology Officer at Iona. For more than a decade, Iona has been a leader in the area of high-performance, service-oriented architecture solutions for IT. And Eric, as their Chief Technology Officer, is responsible for communicating their technology roadmap and product strategy. Eric is also responsible for all of Iona's participation in the standards bodies. He's a founding member of the XML Protocols Group, W3C, which produced the SOAP 1.2 specification. He's also co-author of WS Transactions and a co-chair of the WSTX Specification Group at Oasis. Eric's going to chat to us about where he sees the industry and its adoption of standards for interoperability, software as a service, software plus services, and he's going to give us an overview of Artix Connect for Windows Communication Foundation. Here's what Eric had to say. So Eric, you've been involved in the area of interoperability, in the area of industry standards for interoperability, web services. You work at Iona, that's what your company does. As an industry, are we actually getting around to solving this problem of interoperability? Are we getting better at it? What's the historical perspective?
I think, Bob, we are getting better. A lot of the web services standards that you mentioned, SOAP, WSCL, WSStar stack, has really helped take us in the right direction. Some of that has learned a big lesson from the web. A lot of the web services specifications are all about bringing some of the lessons that were learned in the web into IT. And in the IT departments, often, you know, applications have kind of grown up the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years. As you know, you've been in the industry a long time as well. The focus early on was, you know, what can we automate next? What's the next application to do? It wasn't really, you know, I have my order entry application, I have my inventory management application. Now these things need to share data a little better, need to interoperate a little better. It was all about, you know, what's the right technology choice for this application? What's the right technology choice for that application? And companies have kind of ended this sort of initial rush, if you will, sort of kind of a land grab to get all these applications done. And they're kind of looking back at what happened and saying, geez, you know, we've got all these different technologies involved. How do we get things to work better when the applications need to share data? And so the industry started to focus much more on interoperability issues, and the web services specs in particular have taken us a nice step forward. I think we still have some work to do, but I think the industry is making progress.
What do you see as the biggest issue we're facing today in the area of interoperability?
Well, again, it kind of goes back to how we have a lot of these different applications that are defined in different ways early on. And think about going back to this analogy of the Internet and the web. One of the lessons we can really learn from the Internet was that one of its biggest values in the beginning was putting together a lot of private networks. I was working at Digital Equipment for a long time, and we had a huge network. We're famous for the DECnet networking technology, but that was proprietary. IBM didn't run it. Other companies ran their own networks. And what the Internet did was put all of that together into one large network. And when we think about the applications that we have inside of IT environments today, they might be client-server applications, they might be three-tier with a middle tier. Those are little mini-networks of communications that the applications are using that also need to be brought together. And we're starting to see that happen, but the challenges really still are about the differences of the technology and how much you can standardize through a common technology such as web services. And you run into issues around data type compatibility, so a lot of different data types people are using in different languages, different technologies, a lot of different communication protocols, a lot of different data formats on the wire. And that's really where we try to come in, is we can help mediate those sort of things. We've been interoperability specialists for about 10 years here, and that's really where we try to focus. How can we get the data formats and the protocols all working together from these little different mini networks and join them up?
If you're fairly far along in your adoption of web services, what do you think then is sort of the next thing you should focus on? Is it governance? Is that the next area that IT should be building up infrastructure and process and capability?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, because in a lot of our experiences with customers, especially around the adoption of SOA for handling some of these integration and interoperability challenges, they will tell us it's not all about the technology. It's also about how your IT culture. You have to move from thinking about specific applications to a broader view in which the applications are cooperating, sharing data. And that requires a governance both at the logical level of the corporation taking an interest and the broader picture of now I've got to get these applications to work together and share data that used to be okay in a single department or single area, filling that just one niche, but now have to fulfill a larger role perhaps across the company. So that requires a change in the IT governance, and we're seeing a lot of tools coming out to support that as that change starts to occur.
Interesting. Now, recently I saw the CIO survey that they do. There's different flavors of it, but every year they ask the top CIOs, what are your priorities for the next year? And on the top 10 list, historically, what we've seen is interoperability would be number two or number three. It was very much front of mind with CIOs. But in the latest survey in the top 10, it doesn't appear. There are things like help the company evolve into new markets, make employees more productive, modernize the application space. So my reaction was, is interoperability no longer top of mind, or is it that it now is sort of considered a fundamental part of what IT does?
Well, I was surprised to see that too, and maybe as an interoperability specialist, a little bit disappointed it had fallen off the list. But I think the other things that are on that list kind of assume interoperability as there. There's kinds of things where companies are looking to improve flexibility of how they can put their applications together, maybe modernize their applications, increase efficiency of the IT departments. These are the kinds of things we hear when companies are investigating SOA as the kind of benefits they're looking for. And I think in SOA, you kind of assume interoperability because you have a service that other services are going to consume and use, and you are trying to build up a little bit of an abstraction using the service layer around the technologies that you have. And they could be heterogeneous technologies, Microsoft, Java, mainframe technologies. All can be kind of thought of with the same construct. They can be service-enabled, all of them, and work together. So I think interoperability is still there. It's just maybe under the covers as an enabler. And maybe the good news is people are kind of assuming the technology exists for that, and they're starting to think about the next order of problems.
Right. So SOA has matured to the point where it's a given. You're going to have to take an interoperability approach in IT for those larger, broader goals that they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, definitely. I think interoperability is assumed part of an SOA.
Right.
And the benefits that people are looking at in those surveys, those challenges they're listing in those surveys, seem to have to do almost directly with the benefits that SOA promises.
Another recent trend, Eric, is that we're seeing in the industry is a building on top of service-oriented architecture in areas such as software as a service, where line-of-business applications are architected in a service-oriented way and then deployed into the cloud with browser-based interface to it. You've seen Microsoft's announcements around software plus services and our take on that. And obviously there's a lot of thought leadership going on in the area of cloud computing. What's your take on that?
That's a fascinating area, Bob. I'm taking a personal interest in this lately, especially as to what some of the big internet companies are doing with their hosting strategies. And I know Microsoft is right there with everybody else with hosting of Exchange services and the big hosting systems behind MSN and those huge data centers there that Microsoft has going. A lot of interesting things are coming out of it. I think that's pretty good summary of a good trend that's coming up, the software plus services. I think companies are likely to move to outsourcing some of the services in their SOA environments over time. The way I kind of look at it, it's a little bit like the old decision point companies would go through when trying to decide to adopt a packaged application, such as an ERP system, CRM system, or something like that. They might think about it more readily for a general ledger or typical functions of a business that anybody would be doing. But for maybe core business applications, they may want to keep a custom app or keep control over something internally and own that software and own that application. I was talking with a big insurance company about a year ago about something like this, about would they consider hosting things on the internet. And they said, well, we have these big insurance documents coming in, insurance claim forms, insurance applications in a lot of different formats from our dealers, from our network of resellers. and we have to transform them into a common format that we can then process. And we don't care who hosts that transformation. That's not our core business. But once we get the document inside and we rate it and we figure out how much it's worth and how we price it, that's core. And we don't want anybody else finding out what we do. We want control over that. So I kind of have that mental model of, you know, there's going to be some of these core applications businesses compete against one another using. There's going to be these other applications that they're not really that invested in. They'll be fine for hosting in the cloud.
So there'll be a blend.
I think so.
It's like everything else that we've seen evolve in the industry. There's no silver bullet. New ideas come around, and they are integrated into a suite of tools.
I think that's right. And you're going to get a lot of hype promoting the new thing, as always, and there'll be a lot of uptake on it, but then there'll be, you know, the balance will be found in the end.
What would you say to someone like this insurance company, and you felt that the solution you had was the right thing, it was right to take whatever service that you were having to be talking to them about, putting it into the cloud, but one of the areas was the area of security around the information. If it was one of those areas where it was right on the fence, what might you say to someone to make them more comfortable with putting their data in the cloud?
Well, there's a lot of good security technologies out there. One of the things that we are often asked to do is bridge security domains as an interoperability specialist. So we have to kind of be familiar with a lot of the different technologies. In this case, when you're talking about a document, you're talking about trying to protect the document, the contents of it, encrypt it, or perhaps pieces of it. So you look for something like XML encryption, key public key, private key connection, so you can encrypt the message so nobody looks at it. That's going to be a big challenge, and I think that's going to be probably one of the biggest questions you get when you start proposing that. But right. I think there are a variety of solutions that are going to be there for it.
So, Eric, I understand Iona has recently announced a new member of the Artix family, the Artix suite, called Artix Connect for WCF.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, Bob, as you probably know, Artix is an interoperability suite of products. It does work across mainframe, Java, Microsoft environments. And in Iona, as an interoperability specialist, we've had a long-standing relationship with Microsoft. One of our original successes back in the Corba days was connecting up Corba on Windows with Corba on Unix machines. And so we've tried to maintain what you might call our independence or our neutrality in the whole, you know, Java versus .NET competition that sometimes some companies will get into. And created Artix as kind of a middle ground that somebody can use to connect up whatever kinds of systems that they need to connect. And in the last few years, we've tried to focus it especially on SOA and build up an SOA infrastructure around it, including orchestration and data services and a little bit of governance tooling. We're starting to bring that out as well. And, you know, we're really excited about the new member of the family because we know that Microsoft is doing some great things around WCF, especially around the web services standards, and support for lots of enabling technologies for the kind of interoperability that our customers like to see. So the new member of the family is a native application that runs right with together with WCF and provides what we think is the best solution for the WCF programmer who wants to work in a Visual Studio environment and connect up to some of these other applications in the enterprise. And the first version has great native support for connecting directly to Java infrastructure through JMS, through RMI, IIoP, through IIoP to Corba applications as well. And then with the rest of the Artix suite, we can provide extensions that get you out even farther than that. But this new little piece of the Artix family is very important to us because it provides something we think is important for the Microsoft programmer to be able to take advantage of those great new features in WCF that are coming out and connect those up directly to other applications in the back end.
So, Eric, why don't you whiteboard for us how Artix Connect for WCF fits in with the Visual Studio development environment?
Oh, sure, Bob. If you think about, you know, this is the Visual Studio window, and somebody's using their WCF code to talk to another object in the Microsoft environment, what we do is put Artix here as a kind of a intermediary that will take the code from WCF and connect it out to things like JMS, EJBs, and Corba systems that live somewhere else. Now, to do this, we just have to get a LOB adapter wizard to pop up that has a little bit of configuration information in here like in the case of JMS, you know, what's the queue name? In the case of EJB or CORBA, you know, what's the network address? And this line of business adapter, which is, you know, part of added into Visual Studio, brings in this configuration information back to WCF, gives it to Artix. Artix generates some code, C-sharp, to add in those capabilities and basically intercept the call so that when somebody's making a call in a C-sharp object or a Visual Basic object to a WCF capability, it goes to Artix instead, in the case when the capability has been configured through the line of business adapter to go externally to a Java technology. It goes into this native Artix application, which is co-located with the Visual Studio application, goes out to those Java technologies based on the information it got from the configuration of the line of business wizard and the code that it generated for the Visual Studio environment. To make this happen, the developer really only needs to get some information from these back-end systems for filling in the wizard. The rest of the code is just native code, just like WCF code, and they need to have no knowledge, really, of what goes on under the covers. There's no need for command line scripts or anything like that. Just get the information from the wizard, generate the code, and you're good. You're still in your Visual Studio environment, the native environment that everybody, Microsoft developers, are very familiar with.